Here in North Carolina, we are continuing to recover from Hurricane Florence, a 400-mile-wide behemoth that crawled across the Carolinas at a whopping 10 miles per hour so that everybody saw it. The storm dropped record amounts of rain, and here in Charlotte, we experienced rainfall for nearly 30 hours straight. People died, and the flooding was catastrophic. Not to be outdone by Americans, China and Hong Kong experienced even more brutality at the hands of the weather over the same period as Typhoon Mangkhut, a super typhoon, ripped through Asia. At this point, I want to say typhoons and hurricanes and cyclones are all the same thing, and they receive their label based on where they originate, back in the character. But the commonality of both of these storms, besides them both being the same thing, was how we heard about them and how much stock we placed in the person delivering the news. Meteorologists are the scientists involved in weather forecasting and understanding. They are also tasked with delivering the bad news about a 400-mile-wide force of nature carrying 150-plus-mile-an-hour winds and tons of gallons of water directly towards you and your family. But they aren't always accurate. According to many, the things are almost never as bad as they make them out to be. Again, according to many. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we're going to take a look at weather forecasting. When did it start? How did it become a part of the news? What they are actually doing? And why they seem to be hyped for nothing? We're going to answer as many of these questions as we can within the time frame we have allotted. So stick with us and get prepared, because it's going to be wet, tremendously wet.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the dots that you need to.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular piece of information that you can get through any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a black activist, advocacy, and think tank with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education and a culture shift with some economics mixed in. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PAXinc.org. Go ahead and become a sponsor, give a donation, become a member, take a survey, browse through the Learning Center, volunteer, read some stuff, share some stuff. Do whatever you can to help them, because they're doing whatever they can to help you. And without further ado, let's go ahead and get into it. I know everybody's excited. We just got over the storms. We're still recovering. People are all like, the weatherman always be lying all the time. It don't even be that bad. He say it's going to rain. It's sunny. He say it's sunny. It rained. He say it's going to storm. It don't storm. He say my house going to get blowed over. It's still standing. Let's get into it. But we can't start here. We got to take it back. As with a good deal of modern technology, weather forecasting in the U.S. got its start as a military tool. In 1870, the 41st Congress of the United States passed a joint congressional resolution requiring the Secretary of War, this is the precursor to the Department of Defense and the Secretary of Defense, to take meteorological observations on military bases and to give notice of approaching storms and the strength of those storms. President Grant signed it into law when the National Weather Service was created within the U.S. Army Signal Services Division of Telegrams and Reports. But there was a lot that happened prior to this incident that itself was a precursor to the modern National Weather Service. You see, going back to ancient times, various societies had various different ways of attempting to predict the weather. But most societies had accepted a basic understanding of the chaotic and unpredictable nature of weather. It wasn't until the mid-1800s that scientists began to really believe and began to work out how the weather worked. In Britain, Admiral Robert Fitzroy, who was also the captain of the HMS Bugle, which circumnavigated the globe with Charles Darwin. I'm sure everybody's heard of Darwinism and Charles Darwin. But anyways, he had gotten fed up with the death and destruction along the British coastlines caused by a lack of knowledge of the weather. In 1854, he created a precursor to the Met Office, the UK version of the National Weather Service, which would be called the Meteorological Department of the Board of Trade, which was to produce wind charts to reduce sailing times. But in 1861, he published entitled The First Weather Forecast, a term he coined. His forecast became wildly popular for a variety of different reasons. Some of the critics, they loved him, and they loved to point out that he got it wrong. Others were organizers and sailors that had a vested interest in him getting it right. And others simply used it as entertainment, kind of like me when I read my horoscope. What made the pieces even more entertaining was that when he was wrong, he would issue an apology of sorts with mentions to some of his critics. Social media. At me, dog. The forecasts weren't his primary reason for creating atmospheric maps, something else that he created. He really just wanted to create storm warnings that could be sent via telegraphs to locations so that people could be prepared. But since he was already looking at the data for storms, he figured why not go ahead and release a two-day weather forecast and the times for specific places. Back in America around 1850, the Smithsonian Institute supplied weather instruments to telegraph companies, who then supplied the information they got from those instruments back to the Smithsonian, who used it to create weather maps. This continued, and by 1860, 10 years later, 500 stations were making weather observations. But this work was interrupted by the Civil War, the War of Succession. The War of the North versus the South. Move forward to after the war, with the growing popularity of weather forecasting by Fitzroy and the increased capabilities of the Smithsonian in the U.S., we find ourselves back to the 1870 Joint Resolution of Congress. From 1870 until 1890, the new Weather Service had three commanders, all of whom served until their deaths. In 1890, President Harrison recommended that the agency be transferred from the War Department to the Department of Agriculture. Now, there is some speculation, I don't know how widespread it was, but I found it when I was doing my research, that this move was suggested because an earthen dam broke in Pennsylvania, killing thousands in 1889. There are other people that say that that wasn't the case. But whatever the reason, the agency was moved from the War Department to the Department of Agriculture, essentially changing the service from a military one to a civilian one. And the name was changed to the United States Weather Bureau. Meteorology worldwide was still in its infancy, but nations all over the world had figured out a scientific way to somewhat accurately predict the weather. The predictions were vague, and in addition to them being somewhat inaccurate due to a lack of sufficient understanding or tools to measure necessary components of the weather, the calculations were also done by hand, which added another component of potential error. Even amongst all this, people still regarded the predictions as valuable. It wasn't until 1904 that meteorologists realized that the laws of fluid motion and thermodynamics could be used for predicting the weather and atmospheric behavior. In 1910, a British scientist attempted to use these new theories to make a 6-hour time period forecast for a change in surface pressure. It took him at least 6 weeks, and his predictions were wrong. Could you imagine that? Investing all that time and energy in something only to be wrong? That's kind of crazy. But he concluded that it would take 64,000 people working around the clock to stay ahead of the weather. Later, in 1993, it was estimated that using the same method that he used, it would have actually taken 204,000 people to stay ahead of the weather. But luckily, we didn't have to create an army of meteorologists to stay ahead of the weather, because in 1946, and yes, the field was stagnant until then, but in 1946, the first electronic computer, the EN IAC, the Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer, was created. This caused the field to start moving forward. And in 1950, the computer was used to produce the first weather forecast using a computer. It was only for 24 hours, but it took 24 hours to complete. But unlike previously, it was successful. The introduction of computers and eventually supercomputers into the field has revolutionized forecasting, speeding up the computations and increasing the accuracy of the models, as large quantities of data can be dumped into the computers and processed seemingly at one time. Calculations that would have taken days, weeks, or months to complete are now done in seconds. But the meteorologist still has to know how the math works and how to read the data. The forecasting models are now roughly 80% accurate. However, we do tend to remember, rightfully so, and we can get into a whole nother show about that, but we do tend to remember more readily the times they get it wrong than all the times they get it right. Out of 100 predictions, being right 80 times is pretty significant. And considering the mathematical equations happening, getting an 80 is pretty amazing. And it's especially amazing when you log on to social media and you find people that can't even get basic order of operations problems right. So when you look at this thing under the microscope, or not even under the microscope, just in comparison to other things that are going on in terms of mathematics, them getting an 80 is pretty doggone significant. What you should do at this juncture, because I can hear some of you doubting that the math is really that hard, go and look up the math. Go and look up the meteorological math that's involved in thermodynamics. Go and look up the math that's involved in the laws of fluid motion. Go and look up the math that's involved in atmospheric predictions. After you look that up, come back and tell me if you think you can do that by yourself, with no calculator or with a limited calculator. You're going to need more than a scratch piece of paper and a solar powered calculator to do that. So Fitzroy produced the first ever daily weather forecast and the first ever weather maps back in 1861. In 1936, the first weather forecast were broadcast on the BBC as an experiment. In 1954, the first weather forecast in front of a map on TV was broadcast. But in America, it wasn't until the late 70s that the weatherman appeared on ABC's Good Morning America, pioneering the use of weather satellite information and computer graphics. That weatherman was John Coleman, who would go on to co-found the Weather Channel in 1982. Entering into the world of television requires ratings, which means giving people something they want to look at. The graphics got more intense, the models popped off the screen more, and the scientists in front of the screen became bubbly professionals like the people next door, if you had a bubbly professional living next door. Anyways, they became more friendly, and a lot of people say they became easier on the eyes. Moving forward, I didn't say that. A lot of people would say that. Hey, a lot of people say that. Anyways, moving forward. But they all seem to follow the same script for how to deliver the weather, how to deliver the news. Weather persons also seem to develop a worst case bias that continues to this day. There are lots of theories surrounding this, from the fact that they would rather you be prepared for the worst and be pleasantly surprised, to it's better to be safe than sorry, to bad news creates more ratings. It should be pointed out that none of those people are using broken models to intentionally deceive anyone. A lot of them take great pride in their forecasting skills, as the ability to accurately predict the weather is the singular metric of achievement and thus reputation. When they get a prediction wrong, it is tracked. And if they get too many wrong, they find themselves out of work, just like anybody else is not necessarily good at their job. And for those of you that are wondering about where you can go to find out the accuracy of your local weather forecast, the website is www.forecastadvisor.com. You go there, you punch in your area code or your city, and it'll give you your forecast for the next 7 days or the next week, roughly. But it'll also give you the accuracy of the forecast provided in that region based on who's providing the forecast. So you got something for the Weather Channel, something for Weather Underground, AccuWeather, Forica, Meteo Group, you know, so it's all there. So go to this website and there'll be a link to the Forecast Advisor website in the show description, so you can check that out as well. So the next time you turn on the Weather Channel and see that smiling face delivering bad news, remember that there is extremely complex and complicated math at work, and that person has a vested interest in giving you accurate information. But also remember that they are batting 80%, which is better than any hitter in the history of the major leagues. One of the greatest hitters of all time, Ty Cobb, hit at 36%. In basketball, Larry Bird was considered money every time he put the ball up, and he only hit at 50% from two and 42% from three. Drew Brees is the most accurate passer in the history of the NFL, and he has a completion percentage of 67%. Sure, there is a 20% chance that they are wrong, but they err on the side of caution, which should be appreciated, not ridiculed. And if Coach Belichick is going to talk bad about how the weather forecasters are always wrong, he should remember that they have a higher winning percentage than he does, because his is only 68%, and they have a much tougher opponent. And they are also more accurate than his legendary quarterback, Tom Brady, who has a completion percentage of 64%. But let me know what you think. Tell me what you think about the forecast. Tell me what you think about the news, the weather, whatnot. And tell me what you think about the new format for this show. Go to the website at www.freedomtrainradio.com and leave a comment, leave a review. Let me know what you think. Talk to us, communicate. And I will see you next week for the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Once again, I want to thank you for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Google Play Music, or Stitcher. Be sure to head to one of those places and leave us a review, and then be sure to head back to the website to let us know what you think about the show and communicate with us. Also, be sure to head to www.PacSync.org and show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is doing big things in the community and trying to do more, always trying to do more. So be sure to head to the website. That's www.PacSync.org. Donate, volunteer, become a member, talk about it, whatever. They can use your support. And once again, they are doing great things in the community. And as always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the Black community. The things that we look at, whether it be on the Trending Tuesday or the regular Lessons from the Screen show, will always be looked at from the Black perspective. So keep that in mind, because we need more minds shaped into that perspective and trying to do things that we need done for ourselves. So with that in mind, again, thank you guys for listening in. Remember to tune in to the Freedom Train Radio. We have the app that's available that you can get from the website. It's in the Google Play Store. Sorry, it's not available on iTunes yet. We have the live internet radio, and we have more shows coming up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I will see you guys for the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.